We're going to end our discussion of insurance types with on a lighter note, and that is life insurance. Huh? We're talking about death here. How's that lighter? But, well, because it turns out that life insurance is a very useful product for those people who need it, and whether you need it or not is something we're going to discuss. And it turns out if you buy the right life insurance, it's actually very cheap. And the right life insurance is called term life insurance. So we start with a quote that you may have heard of, maybe not. But by the end of our presentation together, you're going to understand what this means. Buy term and invest the difference. Now, many financial advisors, many books and the like and articles will recommend buy term and invest the difference. But none did it as well, I believe, in my humble opinion, as David Chilton in The Wealthy Barber. He really described the reasoning behind it and the process that you go through the best, in my humble opinion, and we're going to steal from him. So thank you very much, Mr. Chilton. So let's get started on slide number 2 with an introduction to life insurance. Life insurance is obtained by purchasing a policy with the insurance company promising to pay a lump sum at the time of the policyholder's death. Some types will pay while the policyholder is still alive if they live long enough. Now, these are a certain type of policy called whole life policies. Actually, they go by various names. And we really want to say that the people who buy whole life policies are stupid, but that's not very nice. We'll say they're uninformed or they were duped. But when you see the word uninformed, you know, put the word stupid in here. Now, are they literally going to restore your life? I mean, you have car insurance. You could crash in a car. They give you a new car. If your home burns down, they give you a new home. No. That's not why. They shouldn't really call it life insurance. The purpose of life insurance is to protect someone who depends on you from financial loss relating to your death. So you're not buying the insurance for you. You're buying it for your loved ones who depend upon you financially. There are some other reasons, none of which are very good, to make charitable bequests. Just give them some money. Don't give them a huge amount from a life insurance policy. To leave as part of your estate to avoid state taxes, be very careful. The IRS looks unfavorably at some of these tactics. They are usually promoted by unscrupulous insurance agents to the wealthy. The problem with these things is you won't know if they're successful because you'll be dead. It will be up to your heirs to fight with the IRS if you're trying to use it to avoid estate taxes, which we'll talk about at the end of the semester. And then to save money for retirement or children. This is the whole life policies for uninformed people that we will thwack generously and copiously this hour together. Not quite an hour. Let's continue. Because here is what I believe it really should be called. This is from The Wealthy Barber. People should buy life insurance so that when they die, their assets combined with their insurance proceeds can allow for the proper winding down of their financial affairs and provide the desired standard of living for the dependents. Really, life insurance is better termed financial protection for dependents. That's the one I would use if I were king of the world. And I decree that life insurance shall no longer be called life insurance. It shall be called financial protection for dependents. Or income replacement insurance, although I don't think that's as useful. Financial protection for dependents. You're buying it not for you. You're buying it for mostly your children or maybe your spouse, depending on your situation. What is the basis of life insurance? Well, the insurance companies are geniuses when it comes to statistics. And they know. You give them your life history, you give them information about your life, they'll come back with a very close number to how long you have to live, barring, you know, any any tragedies. Yeah. Your premium is based on your life expectancy and the projections for the payouts for persons who actually do die, accidents, whatever. Here's what you're doing, folks. You're essentially betting the insurance company that you will die prematurely. It's a bet that you hope you lose, right? And so does the insurance company, because then they don't have to pay. And as I said, they have a very good idea of how many people will die statistically, how many will live, how long they'll live to. This is a wonderful job if you are math inclined. If you love math, it's called an actuary. And nobody really knows when they hear the word actuary. What is that? Those are people who create these predictions and statistics on how many people are going to live, how many people are going to die, how long they're going to live. And there's a wonderful website called The Longevity Game. So do play The Longevity Game and realize that it's just, you know, it's statistically speaking, I'm not sure what the level of confidence is, because we could all get kissed by a bus tomorrow. And but they're very close, very, very close, very interesting. To play the long, we would do this, of course, in the face-to-face class. We'd stop and actually ask some people to give their information and go through the longevity game. Okay, there are two types of life insurance companies. And we really, again, this is one of those things that kind of like the perils, hazards, and risks that we learn about and quickly forget after the take the exam, even if we remember for the exam. But there's a reason for that that we'll coax out of it over the next couple of slides, okay? Most companies are stock life insurance companies. They are owned by the shareholders, right? They're for-profit entities. And they sell non-participating policy, and notice that 82% of policies were non-participating. The amount of the premium stays the same. The other type are mutual life insurance companies, kind of like a credit union, right? These are owned by the policyholders, although the people running the thing are making a good salary. Don't worry about them. But only a little under 15% as of 2020, according to the 2021 American Council of Life Insurance Factbook, which comes out in late October. Only a little under 15% are this type of company, and fewer every year are. A lot of them are becoming more stock life insurance companies. And they sell typically participating pre-policies, where the premium is not fixed. Notice that only a little under 18% of these policies were sold in 2020. But here's why you want to know the difference. Because if you find a mutual life insurance company that sells a participating policy and you're a part of a group that is typically very long-lived, then you can really do well with these types of policies. Because what happens is they tell you, you know what, we're going to charge you instead of $400, which is what the non-participating policy is going to charge, we're going to charge you $600. And you say, well, what a deal that is. No. But this year, we're refunding. They call it a policy dividend, but it's not a dividend. Like the IRS says, oh, a dividend. You're getting. No, it's not a dividend. It's a refund. We're only going to charge you $200 this year because your group that you're in has performed very well, meaning a lot fewer people have died. And I had one of these many years ago because there's a company called TIAA, Teachers Insurance Annuity Association, that now they can market to everybody. But at first, when they were created, they just marketed to teachers. And teachers live a long time. I think it's because we give our stress to our students, right? So, so it was a really pretty decent policy. They were, you know, they could have charged me a certain amount, but they were actually charging me less because our group did well. And that was a long time ago, so I don't know. I haven't looked at any of these lately. So don't be put off by the dividend. It's not a taxable transaction. But in general, you want a non-participating policy because it's going to be stable. If for some reason there was something that happened to a bunch of teachers, that the policy that I had many, many years ago, folks, would have policy premium would have jumped up. And it turns out we're going to see that policy, non-participating policies are so cheap now that it really makes sense to stick with them. But that's just something that you, of course, would learn if you get in the industry, and maybe it applies to you depending on your situation. Okay, let's get to something important here, and that's determining your needs. The first question you should ask is, do you need life insurance? Because not everybody needs life insurance. Folks, if you have a car, you need car insurance. If you have a home, you need homeowners insurance. Probably should have renter's insurance. Everyone should have health insurance, but not everyone should have life insurance. Ask yourself, are there any people who depend upon my income for their living expenses? And if the answer is yes, it's not a question of whether or not you need insurance, it's how much you need. Yeah. But if the answer is no, you do not need life insurance, no matter what the life insurance agent says, because a life insurance agent's going to want to sell you life insurance. Even if you're single and don't have anybody, no one depends upon you, you're going to be told by an insurance agent, oh, of course you need life insurance. Your policy is acting as a savings vehicle. It's cheaper when you are younger, and you should buy insurance now while you are healthy and can get it. And your response to each of these should be nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. The savings vehicle that they are selling you has a rate of return that is awful. These are the whole life policies for uninformed people. Insurance is cheaper when you're younger. Well, that is true, but so what? You don't need it. Why buy it? And you should buy insurance now when you're healthy and can, well, there's a grain of truth to this. Only 2% of people are turned down, and most of them are people who should have known better. They had children, the children are growing, and all of a sudden, they're 10 and 12. They should have bought it when they were 2 and 4, but they're 10 and 12, and now the breadwinner gets cancer or dies in a car crash or whatever. Well, I'm sorry, not too late, they're already dead. But if they get cancer or hepatitis B or whatever, now they apply for life insurance, the insurance companies are not going to take them. So these are people who should have gotten it when they had the children, and you're going to be one of them because you're going to understand, if I have children, oh yeah, I need life insurance. So don't let them sucker you into buying life insurance if you're single or nobody depends upon you financially. And do not ever buy life insurance for a child. See, the industry is brilliant, right? They know when your child is born, that data is neatly tucked away in several databases, and they'll send you something in the mail with the Gerber baby with the chubby cheeks. And don't you want to buy life insurance for your child? Wait a minute. Would you be devastated emotionally if your child dies? Oh, yeah. It's just a horrible thing to happen. But would you be devastated financially if your child dies? No. Excuse me for being callous, but you will be better off financially if your child dies. Because there's... I think you understand where I'm going. It's not a pleasant thing to think about, but yes, you don't need life insurance for a child. And these life insurance policies are absolutely awful. They'll say, oh yeah, you're going to save some money. You're going to have a great funeral if the child does die, which is not going to happen. The insurance companies know most children don't die young. I mean, it happens very, very rarely, and it's a horrible thing. But by the time they're 18, you have enough money to buy 2 books for college. So just don't ever buy life insurance for a child. But if you have children, oh yeah, young married couples, single people with one or more children almost always need life insurance. The question for them is not do we need it, but rather how much do we need? And the answer is often more than you think. We will discuss how much in a bit. There's a rule of thumb, which is not bad, but then there's a much more exhaustive, descriptive, and useful method that you're going to go through if you have children and need life insurance as your assignment. And if you don't have children, if you're single, it's very simple. You just use this rule of thumb and go do a quote because you don't need it, so don't buy it if you don't need it. Don't forget the non-wage earner spouse. Normally, it makes sense to have some insurance on a non-wage earner spouse, the stay-at-home mom, the stay-at-home dad, have enough to pay off the debts and replace the services that the non-wage earner spouse provided. Well, there's a caveat to this, right? Yeah, you definitely want to pay off the debts because then the family is debt-free, and that's one less thing to worry about. You just lost one of the parents, one of the spouses. It's a horrible, horrible thing. But the issue is, are you going to need the services of that the non-wage earner spouse provided? Well, if you're a man, not for long, because typically men remarry quickly. Women, on the other hand, say, oh, no, 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 no. I already have two kids. I don't want to have another one in the house. And this is a pecking order that is given to us by the sociologists, folks. This is the most, this is the least, this is the second most, this is the second least. And what are they talking about? Happiness. The most happiest people are married men. The most unhappiest people are single men. In fact, married men live longer and are in better health. The single men just say, oh, it just feels like they're married. they just feel like they're living longer. Yeah, what's the joke? You want to live forever? Yeah, get married. Every day will seem like an eternity. But students sometimes ask me, are you happily married? I say, oh, yes, I'm very happily married. My wife told me to tell you that, yes, we are very happily married. Anyway, notice that the single women are the second happiest people, whereas the married women are the second unhappiest people. In fact, women, especially after several years of marriage, don't want to get remarried. I mean, obviously, it's a generalization. Some do, but it's it's quite interesting, isn't it? And I'm not going to go there, folks. I'm just going to tell you that, indeed, there are wonderful, wonderful, and this is what we do more often in the face-to-face class, jokes about married men and married women and single men, women and single men. And you know why married women always weigh more than single women? Well, it's very simple. You see, a single woman comes home, looks what's in the fridge, and then goes to bed. Right? Looks what's in the refrigerator, and then goes to bed. A married woman comes home, sees what's in the bed, and then goes to the refrigerator. Okay, I got plenty more if you want them. Okay, what are some examples? Who needs life insurance? A young married couple with no children. Probably not. It depends. Are they both working? Do they have a big mortgage? Yeah. They might want to have some insurance on each other in case one of them passes away so that the other one can deal with the issue of them passing, which is, you know, emotionally distraught, and not have to worry about a mortgage or other things. But in general, not so much. But if they have two children, a young married couple with two children, oh, yes. 99.9% of the time, they're going to need life insurance. And the cool thing, as we're going to learn, is that it's dirt cheap. Okay. How about a single adult, unmarried couple? Single adult, no. Married couple, probably not. How about a single adult who's a partner in a business? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, most partnerships in business will have insurance on each other so that if the one person in the partner or the three partners or whatever passes away, the entity isn't in jeopardy. What happens if one of the partners dies and their spouse says, well, I don't want anything to do with this business, and they want to sell it to the other partner who's still alive and he or she doesn't have the money, so the partner's wife or husband sells it to somebody else. You see, that's why you have to always think, is somebody dependent upon my life, my income, for their well-being? How about a married couple with children, but both parents are very high wage earners? Either of them could do just fine on their own. What if they both pass away? And there is a type of insurance that will only pay if both parents, say, die in a car crash or whatever. It's dirt cheap because it just doesn't happen very often. How about the middle-aged couple? Children gone, house paid off. They don't need insurance anymore. No matter what the insurance agent says, they're fine. You know, the house is paid off. They've hopefully saved for retirement, which we're going to learn about in a couple weeks now, actually starting next week when we start investing. How about that same middle-aged couple taking care of one or more of their aged parents? Oh my goodness, now all of a sudden the aged parents are dependent upon them. And when you get to your 50s, folks, the insurance companies, they don't want you anymore. They just don't want you anymore. So that's an issue. Hopefully the aged parents have not necessarily taken care of themselves financially as well as physically. So there are situations where it gets very, very difficult. But always think, who depends upon me for their financial well-being? Okay, so now how do you estimate your life insurance requirements? There are several ways. None of them are very good, except for the one that David Shelton in The Wealthy Barber describes. Get out your financial statements. Remember them? Yeah. Use your net worth statement to total your debts. Start with at least this much life insurance. Why? Because the surviving spouse, the family, will be debt-free. As we said, it's emotionally distraught enough to lose a spouse, a parent, in a situation. If you have no debts then afterwards, that's one less thing to deal with. Now you create the second cash flow statement without the person's income and without the person alive. So you might not need two cars. You certainly don't need two cell phones or whatever. This will tell you how much income the surviving family will need, determine the principal needed to generate that income, and we'll learn how to do this later when we get to investments. You add the first amount, the debt, to the second amount, the principal, and this will tell you pretty much how much life insurance you need. The rule of thumb, which is sometimes very accurate, sometimes very inaccurate, is 10 times your annual salary. Again, you got to know how much debt we're dealing with. But let's say the person's making $50,000. You multiply by 10, that's $500,000. And that's a very typical amount that people will get for their insurance. It's interesting. If you bump it up to $1 million, depending on the situation, it really doesn't cost that much more money. Because if you're in good health, young, the insurance companies know it's very unlikely that you're going to die within the next 20 years, which is a typical term life insurance policy. Okay, so you're going to do that, by the way. You're going to do this as your assignment. Now, if you don't need insurance, if you're single, you don't have kids, then you're just going to multiply your salary by 10. Okay, fine. Or just get one for $500,000, all right? If you are married, you have children, you need to do this because, and you can talk to a life insurance agent. It's funny, in the assignment, I said real estate agent. I thought, what did I do? I came back and I caught myself. I said, did I say real estate agent? My apologies. No, talk to a life insurance, get a good referral. Or just, you know, work it out. Talk to me. I'd be happy to help you. I can talk about this stuff far longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen. Okay, so now we're going to spend some time on the two different types of life insurance policies, because this is where the insurance companies will really just, they'll just rip you blind, folks. I mean, remember, I'm an insurance agent. I'm an insurance agent. And so I can tell true things about the insurance company. Term life, the only type of, wait a minute, Piano, you just told me that there were two types. Hold on. This is protection for a specified period of time. If you don't pay the premiums, the coverage stops. A renewability option means that at the end of the term, you can renew the policy without having a physical. But you don't want to do that because after 20 years, the policy premium is going to skyrocket because, you know, you're 30, 20 years later, you're 50. Now they don't want you. Okay? They don't want you anymore. So they're going to charge you an outrageous amount of money for you to go away. The conversion option allows you to change your policy from term to whole life without physical, if you're uninformed enough to actually buy a whole life policy, which you aren't. You're going to be informed and you're not going to buy a whole life policy. Our brave hero, yippee, hooray! This is how I try to get the folks in the face-to-face class excited, and they usually just look at me and roll their eyes. Okay, the evil villain is the whole life policy. It's also known as the straight life, ordinary life, cash value life, adjustable life, variable life, universal life, variable university life, etc., etc., etc. Why do they keep changing the name? You pay a premium as long as you live. The amount of premium depends on your age when you start the policy. It provides death benefits, which is what a life insurance policy is supposed to do, and accumulates a cash value. That's why it's sometimes called cash value life. You can borrow against the cash value or draw it out at retirement. If you look carefully at the rate of return your money earns, it is almost always abysmal, sometimes less than 1%, sometimes less than 0%. What? Every 10 years or so, the insurance industry changes the name of whole life policies. Why? Because eventually, consumers get hip to the how they're being screwed. To confuse the issue, they just change the name. Heaven forbid they stop selling the cursed things. The newest spin is permanent life insurance. Wouldn't you really rather have permanent whole life insurance instead of just temporary term life insurance? Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have permanent car insurance? Do you have permanent home insurance? Yes. Okay. You buy the home insurance. Your house doesn't burn down. Oh, well, great. You lost the bet. You wanted to lose the bet. The same thing is true of your car. You don't want to get in an accident and you don't want to die prematurely. But the insurance companies are not stupid. The life insurance companies are often called the invisible bankers. They are able to get people to way overpay for life insurance and create this savings account that is worse than anything the banks can do to you. Oh, well. So, to review, term versus whole life. Term life isn't life insurance without a savings component. Whole life insurance is a life insurance with a savings component. Okay, what's the big deal, Payano? If the insurance company is offering to provide me with a life insurance and a savings plan, why not let them? I mean, what do you got this axe to grind? Okay, let's see why. If you go out there right now, depending on your situation, let's say 32-year-old male preferred, mean you don't smoke, you're in good health, no history in your family of heart disease and cancer, 20-year term policy, which is typical. The kids are 2 and 4, 20 years, the kids will be 22 and 24. Great. It's about $250 a year, sometimes a lot less. If you're a woman, it's even less. If you were to go out and find a whole life policy, now there are various types, but let's just say a generic whole life policy, 32-year-old male preferred for $500,000 is $250 per month. $3,000 a year. You're starting to see a difference? Yeah, okay. This is from The Wealthy Barber, and I paraphrase, but David Chilton, thank you very much. I don't know where he is. He's Canadian, by the way. He's probably retired by now. If a company came up to you and said, to save at our institution, you must buy life insurance. You must pay for it, even if you don't need it. We'll take everything you deposit in the first few years for ourselves. In future years, we'll charge you to deposit money into your savings account. You can borrow the money anytime, but we'll charge you interest. If you happen to die while this loan is outstanding, we'll decrease the amount we were to pay your beneficiaries by the outstanding amount of the loan. If you don't borrow from this account and you die, we'll pay the beneficiary the face amount of the policy. We'll keep your savings for ourselves. Oh, by the way, we don't offer the greatest rates of return, usually between 1% and 2%. Now, most of these policies that had the most egregious provisions are no longer sold, or if they are, by really unscrupulous people. But still, you see, they're not doing you a big favor, folks. Yeah, okay. Insurance companies are regulated by the states. For the last 50 years, 60, 70 years, virtually every insurance commissioner's office in every state has publicly stated that term life is a better deal for consumers than whole life insurance. Virtually every consumer's group recommends term life insurance over whole life. How about now? So do you understand now why we say buy term and invest the difference? Is it starting to make sense? But Mr. Insurance Salesperson will tell you, but with our whole life policy, you get forced savings. Most people don't have the discipline to buy term and invest the difference. Even with the best intentions, they will not do it. Do you understand what they're saying? They're saying you are stupid. You're going to put an automatic payment for $250 a month to the whole life policy, but you're not smart enough to pay them $250 one month a year. Don't pay them 12 months a year because they charge you $2 every time you pay them. And then the other 11 months, you take that $250 and put it in your Roth IRA or your other investment account. If you have the discipline to make the payments to the life insurance company, surely you have the discipline to make the payments to your own savings or investment plan. Again, we'll discuss dollar cost averaging and automatic contribution, systematic investment plan. It's just plain nonsense. And here's another thing. If you type in buy term and invest the difference, you can better be sure that your search engine is going to be chock full of articles sponsored by the insurance industries that are going to tell you why buy term and invest the difference is a myth. It's not a very good, it really turns out it's not the best way to invest your money. No. You may have mediocre returns. Instead, give us the money. We'll guarantee that you get mediocre. No, they're not going to say that. So be careful, right? The industry has a vested interest in pushing these things. Why? Well, think about it. That $250 per year policy, if you're in a sales agent, the insurance agent, you'll get about $60-$70 in commission. And then next year it's a little lower, and after that it goes, you know, very low over the years. If you sell that whole life policy for $250 per month, $3,000 per year, you're going to get $1,500 the first year. And then it goes down from there. So if you're an insurance agent, oh yeah, you want to convince yourself that you're doing the best for your clients by selling them permanent life insurance. Because what happens if they're in their 60s and they still need life insurance? And they didn't do a very good job of paying down their debt, did they? They didn't do a very good job of investing, did they? No. Oh, well. So do you see why we call term life insurance the only type of life insurance? It doesn't matter which one you buy. You are still paying for protection for your dependents in the event of your death. With term life, you're only paying for that protection. With whole life, you are paying far more for that protection, plus you're being tapped for an awful savings program that you may not even get to use. Lastly, if you do invest the difference and are prudent, patient, long-term oriented, don't panic when the markets fall, as we'll talk when we get to investments. By the time you are nearing retirement, you will not need life insurance anymore. You will be self-insured. The house will be paid off or pretty darn close. This is why you're taking this class, folks. This is why you're taking this class. So don't let the insurance company fool you. Buy term and invest the difference. So, according to the 2021 American Council of Life Insurance Factbook, in 2020, there were 5.9 million whole life policies sold and only 4.18 million term policies sold. Are you surprised? The insurance agents are incentivized to sell you whole life. They're not incentivized to sell you term life. So are we surprised? No. The insurance industry has the incentives all backwards. They're trying to get people to buy these whole life policies, and they're not in the best interest, in my humble opinion. And you're going to hear other people say otherwise. You're going to hear people who are on the side of buy term and invest the difference. But most of the people who are saying otherwise are usually have a financial incentive to say otherwise. But notice the amount of insurance issued in 2020, according to the 2021 American Council of Life Insurance Factbook. Only $490 billion of life insurance issued, not the number of policies, but how much the policies were for, was whole life. Whereas there was $1.363 trillion of term life issued, over 2.5 times as much. Huh? I do not understand. Look, it's very simple. The number of whole life policies is far greater than the number of term life policies mostly because life insurance salespersons get far greater commissions from selling whole life. But the amount of insurance in force for term life is far greater than whole life. Because term life is far less expensive than whole life, you can buy the amount you actually need. Okay, so think about this, folks. This is the dynamic. After the insurance agent convinces the poor slob that she needs whole life, she's got two kids, whatever, the agent sells her far less insurance than she needs because the poor slob cannot afford to pay the $250 a month for the $500,000 policy. She can't afford to pay the huge premiums for the amount of insurance her family really needs. Oh, I can only pay $85 a month. Great, $100,000 worth of life insurance. But that's not what she needs. Personally, I believe this behavior should be criminal, criminally negligent. Because if the poor slob actually were to die prematurely, her family's going to suffer. And now we would jump to this whole life illustration, and I do hope you'll take a look at it. And it was sold to a gentleman who at the time was single, and he never had any kids. He got married, but then since divorced. And he showed me this thing, and I tried to, about year 20, I tried to explain how he's been screwed. He said, what should I do with it? I said, well, I would cash it out. I wouldn't stop buying. You don't need life. You're single. You don't need life insurance. No. You're going to have kids? No, I don't think I'm going to have kids. Yeah. And we're going to come back to this whole life illustration as we go through and compare it to our investments that we'll discuss over the next few weeks when we get through investments. So, yeah, you know, if you're an insurance agent, you might be thinking, Piano, you are just out to lunch. We're going to sue your butt. In which case, fine. Let's let the information go out. What's it called? Discovery? Let's show them the facts and see what the jury says. Okay. Now, there are other types of group life policies. Other types of life insurance policies. Typically, group life is through your employer or professional association. It's usually a very good deal, sometimes even free. Southwestern gives us I'm part-time now. I used to be full-time, but I'm not sure if I still get the same deal. But everybody who works for Southwestern gets a $50,000 life insurance policy. No physicals required. So, hey, think about it. It's always term. There are credit life insurance. Notice we've crossed them out for your car, your furniture, credit cards. I can't believe it. You know, the mortgage ones make sense because you do want your mortgage to pay for. But typically, it's more expensive than if you just bought life insurance. If you just bought the regular life insurance that pays for no matter what. So don't buy these. And then there are these very cheap, some of them are not that cheap, accidental death, double indemnity. They only pay if you die from a car accident or whatever, you know, some kind of accident or something like that. No, you don't care how the person dies. Is he dead? Oh, how sad. How did he die? Skiing accident? Oh, good. No, don't buy accidental death. And some of the examples you'll see, they're more expensive than just buying a regular life insurance, term life insurance policy through the place that I'm going to show you in the presentation, which is, there are dozens of these things, but this one's one of the few that doesn't ask for a quote for your information before they give you a quote. Most of them are going to want, you know, they want your contact information. They're going to try to, what they do is they sell that information to various life insurance agents who bid on your business. But this one, lifeinsure.com, still will give you a quote without having to give them your contact information. And you'll see that presentation separately. Or we'd show it in the face-to-face class, but we're not going to show it now. Okay, what are some of the contract provisions? Well, make sure you name your beneficiary. Update it when necessary, because just because you get divorced, if you don't change the beneficiary, it's still going to go to the jerk if you pass away. So make sure you keep the beneficiary and contingent benefit. Like that word, I love that word, contingent, if the beneficiary passes away before you do. The suicide clause is very interesting. I don't want to get into it too much, but if you are contemplating suicide, and maybe you're doing it because your business has failed and you're going through bankruptcy and you want to make your family whole, the first 2 or 3 years, they're not going to pay. Because if somebody is considering committing suicide, they're already, you know, mentally ill, so they don't want to encourage that. So they're going to say, look, you got to wait at least 2 years. Look it up. If you are considering suicide, by the way, do talk to your doctor and your psychologist. Contact. There are help. There's help out there, folks, believe it or not. Misstatement of age. Don't lie about your age. Again, what will they do? In the case of suicide within the first 2 or 3 years or a misstatement of age, they simply give back the principal. They say, sorry, you know, this, you lied about your age or you committed suicide. We're going to give you the principal. We're not going to give you the $500,000. If you have been diagnosed with a terminal disease, there's often a accelerated benefits, viatical settlements that allow you to pull the money out before you die to help give you some kind of, you know, hospice care or whatever at the end of life. If you become disabled, the industry says, all right, we're going to waive the premium. We're going to say you don't have to pay the premium, which is actually pretty cool. The loan provisions and the premium paid from cash value, these are whole life policies for uninformed people. Yeah, stay away from them. What they do, this is one, a woman came to me and asked me about her whole life policy. And she said she'd stop paying it. And all of a sudden, the cash value is going down. I said, because they're taking the cash to pay the premium. They're pulling out the cash. Is that allowed? I said, yeah, you signed the contract. I said, isn't that horrible? Yeah. But you don't want to have your policy lapse, do you? Yes, I do. Give me the cash. I said, just take the cash. Take the cash out. Cash out the policy. And now, some people get really upset. They think, oh, it's been 20 years and I didn't die. Congratulations. So what the industry will offer are return of principal term life policies. If you live the whole 20 years, they'll give you your principal back. Well, now, wait a minute. How's this work? They're just charging you a whole lot more and investing the difference, and they're hoping that they're going to make some money off of not only your insurance that you paid, but also the extra amount that so they can pay you back if you make it to 20 years. If you don't make it to 20 years, they keep that amount, but they do pay the face value. So it's not usually a good idea. Again, congratulations, you lost the bet. You don't want to die prematurely, and neither does the insurance company. Okay. One of the sayings in the industry is that life insurance is sold, not bought. So get a good referral. Is the person willing to take the time to answer your questions? Find the policy that's right for you. Are they available when needed? Do they ask about your financial plan? Do you feel pressured? Most importantly, are they still trying to sell you whole life when you've already told them 3 times that you want term life? Just kick them in the butt as you get them. Oh, excuse me. I have to be careful of my blood pressure is rising here. It just drives me insane. But hey, you know, what can I say? I'm doing my best to educate you, and you're going to be the financial guru for your friends and family and colleagues, and you're going to explain why buy term and invest the difference is so cool. And they're going to thank you, probably not, but hopefully they will, because you will have saved them tens of thousands of dollars over the course of their lifetime. Anyway, how do you get the policy? Well, you got to apply. They're going to want your medical history. They're going to want you to do a physical. They're going to check the MIB, right? If it's a group policy, you don't have to worry about a physical. Read every word of the contract. These whole life policies have this 10-day period to cancel the policy, right? What is this all about? Well, people start complaining to their elected representatives and saying, this is ridiculous. I was sold this policy. It's a piece of garbage. I can't believe it. And now my husband passed away and it's not nearly enough money. So the elected representatives say, we got to do something about this. And the insurance agents and the insurance company comes around and says, well, think about it now. You're stopping people from making a choice. You don't want that to happen. I know. Let's give them 10 days to review the policy. They didn't understand it before you sold it to them. You think they're going to understand it after 10 days? Give your beneficiaries, your lawyer, a photocopy. Make sure everybody can figure out what's going on. Choosing the settlement options. Now, this is not for you if you buy the insurance. This is for you if you're the beneficiary. The lump sum payment is almost always the best choice. The company could say, okay, well, look, it's $500,000. We'll pay you $50,000 over the next 10 years. How about that? Or we'll sell you an annuity so that you will be paid a certain amount for the rest of your life. Oh boy, we're going to thwack annuities when we get to investments. They are typically awful. And you can tell the insurance agents I said that. There might be one or two that are not bad. But in general, annuities are not a good choice. Not a good choice. And then the company might say, well, hey, you can leave the money with us. We're life insurance companies. We're called the invisible bankers. We're not called the invisible bankers for nothing. So we'll pay you interest. But in general, no matter what the life insurance company says, take the lump sum and invest it. Leave a letter of instruction. If you're the insured, by the end of the class, you will have a rudimentary knowledge of investments that will give you a rate of return over the long term, prudent, long-term oriented, that is at least 2 to 5 times better than anything the life insurance company will offer you. The insurance companies, this is their business. They love to prey upon the surviving spouse. Put their arm around them. Dear, it's often a woman because men don't live as long as men and women in general, but not always. We'll give you an income for the rest of your life. What they don't say is we'll screw you for the rest of the life because this annuity is paying you dirt squat. Again, don't gamble with your money. No, you might get mediocre returns. Give it to us. And that's exactly what you're doing. You're giving their money to them. And we'll guarantee that you have mediocre returns for the rest of your life. Okay. Should you switch policies? Well, if it's a term policy and the benefits exceed the cost of getting another physical and paying the policy setup costs, okay. But don't cancel the old policy until the, you know, few months after the new policy is in effect. Because what if you cancel this policy, then you go to the other policy, and all of a sudden it turns out you have hepatitis B, and now you're really screwed, right? So don't cancel the old policy. This is an issue, switching policies. Normally, the only reason people switch whole life policies is because a life insurance salesperson convinced them to switch. Why did they want them to switch? Well, if they were uninformed enough to buy a whole life policy in the first place, they're probably uninformed enough to switch to a new policy. And the salesperson gets a ton of new commission. Remember that 1,500 hours I talked about? It goes down rapidly after the second year. So the insurance agent wants to get that back up again. Several years ago, a few insurance companies, won't name any names, Prudential, got into a hot water situation for pushing elderly folks to switch policies. One guy had switched a policy, I forget how many times, it was like a dozen times, more than that, maybe a couple dozen. And he should have gone to jail, in my humble opinion. He was barred from the industry for life, and the insurance company made the poor widow whole. But still, there are people like this. And the law allows them to do it, and they do it. So be careful. So, the bottom line. Right, we said bohica. Do you need life insurance? Buy term and invest the difference. And again, you're going to hear people, mostly from the insurance industry, try to badmouth this and, you know, listen to their arguments and then come back and review what we learned here, and you'll be educated. You will not be uninformed. You will not be buying a whole life policy and being screwed for the rest of your life. We're done with insurance. Now, dear students, oh boy, we're ready to start my favorite part of the semester, and that is investments. So we'll see you in our next presentation, Fundamentals of Investing. Thank you so much for being in our class. We are so proud of you. Think of how much you have learned.